Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University. Offering 1 to 2 year master's degree programs in business administration, healthcare leadership, and servant leadership. Viterbo.edu/graduate.
Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
It could be months yet before results of the 2020 census are known. A lot of factors contributed to the once-in-a-decade count being delayed, including the pandemic and some changes called for by the Trump administration. But there are a lot of signs already about significant population changes in the United States, including a slowdown in population growth, and that could have a big impact on politics, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the census, how it's gone, what it means? Did you work on the census effort in 2020? What was your experience like? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Reed Wilson is a correspondent for The Hill and the author of the book Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. He's been writing about the census. Reed, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me again.
Now, I think people might hear census and the numbers that come out of it and get a little eye glazing. And so what about it? Remind us of why the census is important to every state in the country.
Yeah, so ever since the very first census in 1790, the federal government has used population figures to distribute billions of dollars in programs to states around the country based on their population and based on the need that the census then demonstrates. So this literally touches the lives of every one of your listeners and me and every one of my neighbors and everybody around the entire country, whether it's school funding or low-income meals or low-income housing assistance or heating assistance, things like that. This program itself is basically how we operate our government. It's the fundamental basis from which we build every program that government runs.
This happens every 10 years, and it happens on kind of a tight schedule. But there were delays last year. Not surprisingly, I guess, in some ways, what were some of the things that led to the census coming in later than expected?
Yeah, so there were delays that were, we'll call them natural delays and then unnatural delays. And the natural delay is obvious. The coronavirus pandemic led to a delay in the sort of an inability of the census to send out what are called enumerators, the people who actually go out and count those who don't respond to the postcard or the email or whatever they get. And those enumerators, the actual counters, you know, they had to do things differently in a pandemic. They couldn't go and knock on your door and talk to you. They either had to stand far away or make a phone call or whatever it was. There were just so many more barriers to the actual follow-up counting. And then there were the unnatural delays. And the unnatural delays were caused by the Trump administration trying to add certain questions to the census, most notably a question on whether or not everybody in the House was a citizen. That led to a lot of consternation among census watchers and demographers who were worried that would for some people, essentially, to skip participating in the U.S. Census. Now, the Constitution says that the census shall count every person in the United States. It doesn't say anything about whether or not they're here legally. Of course, illegal immigration wasn't really a concept back during the writing of the Constitution. And in every census since, I think it's 1950, there has been no question about whether or not somebody is a citizen in order to increase participation. Because, you know, even if you're undocumented in the U.S., you still take up some kind of public services. Your community still has to pay for whatever services you use. And therefore, they want an accurate, those communities themselves, the governments themselves, want an accurate count. So the court fight over that delayed things further. And then the Trump administration tried to rush the count and finish up before he left office. Now that's not going to happen. Obviously it didn't happen, but they're effectively right now, they're perfecting the data and trying to make sure that everything is all square and they have the most accurate possible count before they release the final population figures sometime later this year. It looks like it's probably going to be around the end of July.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill. We're looking at the census coming in later than expected this year, what it means, and we'll get into some of the population changes going on in the country. looks like we're happening that are happening even before we know these census numbers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jake is with us in Appleton. Jake, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Jake?
You know, I'm just curious because, you know, every 10 years there's so many advances in technology and ways at extrapolating information. I'm still kind of surprised we have a lot of self-reporting type operations and activities to get and draw a census. Are there any plans or is there a more modernization efforts going on to start using some technology and, you know, ways to gather information on the census, maybe with, you know, the digital age or social media, or is that considered almost too far-reaching?
Jake, thanks for the call. Reed, the census and modern technology, what do we know about keeping up with the times there?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jake. And you know, 10 years ago, in the last census, there was a big plan. Well, I should say more than 10 years ago. These things take years to plan. Right before the last census, there was a whole big effort to try to use BlackBerries and sort of more digital technology in order to create a better count. And at the very last minute, the Obama administration scrapped plans for that. It cost billions of dollars, and they basically went back to paper and pencil. This time around, there has been a lot of technological advances. The vast majority of us responded to our census online. By the way, I should credit to Wisconsin. Wisconsin was among the highest in the self-reporting states across the country. And I mean, technology is always going to advance. One of the good bits of this is basically the technology has advanced in other areas of government so much that now when the Census Bureau realizes that they've missed, you know, X percentage of people in their initial count, they can go to other lists that are being maintained by other parts of government and fill in a lot of those gaps. And that's the process that's actually happening right now, sort of curing the lists and making sure that the count is as complete as possible, even if not everybody raised their hand. They still know, based on, you know, some other list, that you or your neighbor lives in this house and there are X number of people there and things like that because you've signed up for other government programs.
Thanks for that call. Now, Reed, you in a recent piece looked at a lot of population trends. You talked to demographers and others about what we know even before these census numbers come out. What kind of things stood out to you about population trends and how they're changing in the U.S.?
Yeah, so the Census Bureau does a lot more than just the decennial census, right? They're constantly surveying people for or businesses or anything like that in these sort of rolling surveys that they have. And one of the things that has become clear over the last 9 years of data is that our country is growing at the slowest rate that it has ever grown. In the last year, between July 2019 and July 2020, the nation's population grew by just 0.35%, which is the slowest year-over-year rate since the Census Bureau started keeping track of that in 1900. And it's probably the slowest year-over-year growth in American history. Almost all of the growth that is occurring among those who are over 55. So we're living longer, and the baby boom generation is moving into that sort of retirement age. So that population grew by 27% over the last decade. For everybody else, everybody under 55, the population grew by just 1.3%. And that's got some ramifications here because we're going to have more and more people who are relying on social safety net, things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and fewer people under 55 in the workforce who are actually paying for it. So that's going to get a bit of a problem here. Population growth that we have seen in the last decade did entirely come from people who are not white. The Hispanic population accounted for almost half of the growth. African Americans accounted for about 3 million of the 20 million new people who live in the U.S. now. And about a quarter came from Asian Americans. They're the fastest growing minority group in America. And we've seen their populations booming just in states across the country. So this is probably going to be the first decade in American history in which there are fewer white people, non-Hispanic white people, at the end of the decade than there were at the beginning of the decade. And long story short, the reason for that is because we're going through a prolonged baby bust. There are fewer people who are actually having kids. Those who are having kids at a later date. And there's this lingering hangover from the recession a decade ago, in which a lot of people delayed the decision to have children. Now those people are probably in their mid to late 30s, and they may not have kids at all. So there are about 3 million more childless women of prime childbearing age in the U.S. than demographers would have expected based on previous decades' trends. So that population growth that's slowing so much, this is going to be a long-term trend. And one of the ways that a lot of the demographers I talked to suggested that is basically the only way we can fill it is through immigration, through letting people in from outside the country. Otherwise, we're going to start to shrink.
We're talking about the 2020 census and ongoing population trends in the U.S. with Reed Wilson, correspondent at The Hill. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did Reed just describe you? Put off having kids maybe after the Great Recession? Having thoughts about it now during COVID-19? Are you part of this big demographic trend? And otherwise, do you have questions about how the census works? Did you work on the census yourself? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Reed Wilson, correspondent for The Hill, looking at the delayed results from the 2020 census and what we know about population changes around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Joan is with us in Minocqua. Joan, hello.
Hello.
Hi. What'd you want to tell us about, Joan?
Well, I was a census worker in, I think I signed something I'm not supposed to reveal any detail, so mm-hmm. I'll give you some broad strokes. I found it to be a fascinating experience, and I'm so glad I did it. I learned more about the population in my area than I ever could have in any other opportunity or group. The majority of people that I saw are second homeowners, and that was really shocking to me. That, well, it was. I mean, it's obvious that a lot of people have cabins up here, but you drive and drive and drive, and then find these homes with all kinds of boats and other devices. You know. That they're used for maybe a couple weeks a year. Mm. That was quite surprising. As far as the demographic, probably out of all the homes I went to, I only talked to people probably less than 10% of the time.
Wow. Joan, thanks a lot for the call. Reed, Joan got kind of a micro insight at the macro level. We get that from the census. And a lot of people end up doing this kind of work that Joan did.
Right. It's millions of people. I mean, it's the basically the largest peacetime mobilization of government workers in any given decade. And it's super cool that Joan did that. And I would bet that it would be a great window into somebody's community. One of the things that she brings up, though, the second homes is sort of intriguing because we have definitely seen a rising trend in the last couple of years in which people are staying put more than ever. They're not moving either between homes or between counties or different states. The rate of people who moved in the last year was about 9.7% of us, which is about a half of what it was back in the 1990s and the 1980s. You know, some demographers think that's because of high housing costs that are keeping people out of big cities, or millennials who have delayed getting into the housing market because the costs are so high, or they've got such huge student debt. But it's an interesting factor that, you know, Joan may be seeing a lot of second homes, but she may be seeing people who have owned those second homes for a long time and who aren't really going to sell them anytime soon.
Joan, thanks for sharing that experience. Before we go back to our callers, Reed, I want to get into another consequence of the census, a political one. This is how we know how many congressional representatives each state gets and how the lines are drawn for Congress and state legislatures. Talk about what we're watching for there in this next 10 years.
So there's sort of a three-step phase here. Step one is the census itself, where we count everybody and where they live. Step two is called reapportionment, which is when the Census Bureau delivers to Congress through the Commerce Department, the number of seats that each state gets. It's a pretty complicated formula, but basically every state gets one seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, and then the largest state based on population gets the 51st state, and then the next largest gets the 52nd. And as it happens, California is so big that they actually get number 51 and 52 all the way down the line until you get to number 435, the number of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. And that then throws the ball into the courts of either the state legislatures or, in a lot of states, independent redistricting commissions, who then draw the political boundaries both for state legislatures and for U.S. congressional seats based on the number of seats they're allocated. It's a pretty fascinating time, and it's going to be really contentious this year, because 10 years ago, so many people paid attention to the redistricting process, and they were outraged by what they called gerrymandering. If you live in a Democratic state, it was the Republicans who were outraged by gerrymandering. If you live in a Republican state, it's the Democrats who are outraged. And we can go into the history of gerrymandering if you want, but the long and short of it is that this is a decennial process that has become increasingly political over the last couple of years, the last couple of decades. And this time around, it's going to be the most political process we've ever seen.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill about the census, its delay, and what comes out of it. Let's go back to your calls now. Jeff is on the line in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. I'm curious, because in the history of the United States, we've seen so many population shifts when there's been a depression. Like in 1894, the population of Superior basically cut in half. The depression in the 1930s, population shifted from the plains to some of the big cities, and then with the World War. But now it seems like when there's a downturn in the economy, people, like you said earlier, are not moving. And I think the repercussions of that are people are more loyal to their state. And I think that's why we're beginning to see a sense of nationalism, and even people that are loyal to their own state, because you got churches and support systems that encourage you to stay put and be where you grow up.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Interesting, Reed, possibly the cultural and social consequences if people are moving less.
Well, it's interesting. I think we would all be shocked to know the percentage of Americans who live their entire lives within 50 miles of where they grew up. It's something like 90% of us don't move more than 50 miles away from the place we grew up. So there's not a huge shift in population, but the shifts that we have seen in the last, I mean, this is basically a century long trend. No, and it's longer than that. This is a trend that has existed since the United States began, is people moving out of the Northeast and into basically sunnier places south and west. There's a really cool product that the census puts out every decade where they spotlight the population median of the U.S. That is basically the midpoint of where we all live based on the weighted populations of the neighboring states. And right now, let's see, in the last decade, it's somewhere in the middle of Missouri right now, but it's basically been moving south and west for the entirety of American history. I would bet you that it's going to move farther south this time than west, because we've seen more population gain in states like Texas and Georgia and Florida and you know, basically North Carolina, basically the southern Sun Belt, and less population gain in western states, places like California. This census, we're likely to see for the first time since it became a state, California isn't only not going to gain any seats in Congress, they're going to lose a seat, which is something that, again, has not happened since California became a state back in 1848.
Now, who are you watching for statewide in terms of who's going to gain or lose congressional seats, Reid?
Yeah, so this is a part of the broad trend. The vast majority of states that are going to gain seats are in the South. Arizona is going to pick up a seat basically from Los Angeles County. Texas is going to pick up at least three, maybe four seats, depending on the final numbers. Florida is going to pick up a couple of seats. Let's see, Georgia picks up a seat. Oregon is the one West Coast state that's set to add a seat to their delegation. On the other hand, the seats that are going to lose, this is another long-term trend. New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all states that have been just bleeding population and power in Congress for the last 60 or 70 years. Alabama is the one exception, the southern state that's likely to lose a seat. There's a real interesting dynamic there. The populations are so close that depending on the final count, either Alabama will lose one of its seats or New York will lose a second seat. And you can bet that whoever ends up losing is going to go to court right away to try to protect that seat, because an extra seat in Congress means hundreds of billions of dollars over the decade.
So, Reed, a timeline. I mean, census is delayed, so we got to get that. We got to get those steps you talked about. Then states have to get their lines drawn. I mean, is there a worry that lines are going to be drawn in time for elections?
There is some worry in some states that hold certain elections this year. New Jersey and Virginia each hold state legislative elections in the year following the presidential contest. And there is a chance that some of those could be delayed. Or at least they might have to run this year's elections under the previous lines and then redo them by the time we get, 2 years down the road. Most other states are going to be just fine. They're going to have enough time to draw their lines because they've got the extra year. But it does create kind of a stasis, because we don't know exactly where the lines are going to be for any particular congressional district. And so if you live in, on the border between, two congressional districts in Wisconsin, and you want to run for office, you don't know which one you're going to live in until, down the line, until a year from now. And of course, congressional races, you got to raise a bunch of money and get your name out there and all that. So, you don't necessarily know who your voters are going to be.
Reed, thanks again for joining us today.
You got it, Rob.
That's Reed Wilson, correspondent for The Hill. He joined us today for a look at the state of the U.S. Census and its results being delayed, and what we do know from researchers about changes in the nation's population. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's our weekly roundup of the top stories in national politics, including the run-up to an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. And black people have a long history in Wisconsin going back to the early days of the state. A historian shares an often overlooked piece of the Midwestern story. That's tomorrow on Central Time.